Chapter 56. Tavern, where they let you choose your dinner from the joints hanging from the rafter, and have passages that you lose yourself in every time you try to go to your room. Couldn't you and Mrs. Clemens step over for a little while? We have seen lots of nice people, and have been most pleasantly made of. But I would rather have you smoke in my face, and talk for half a day just for pleasure, than to go to the best house or club in London. The reader will gather that this could not be entirely soothing to a man shackled by a contract and a book that refused to come to an end. To W.D. Howells, in London. Hartford, Conn. October 30, 1882. My dear Howells, I do not expect to find you, so I shan't spend many words on you to wind up in the perdition of some European dead letter office. I only just want to say that the closing installments of the story are prodigious. All along I was afraid it would be impossible for you to keep up so splendidly to the end. But you were only, I see now, striking 11. It is in these last chapters that you struck 12. Go on and write. You can write good books yet, but you can never match this one. And speaking of the book, I include something which has been happening here lately. We have only just arrived at home, and I have not seen Clark on our matters. I cannot see him, or anyone else, until I get my book finished. The weather turned cold, and we had to rush home, while I still lacked 30,000 words. I had been sick and got delayed. I am going to write all day, and two-thirds of the night, until the thing is done, or break down at it. The spur and burden of the contract are intolerable to me. I can endure the irritation of it no longer. I went to work at 9 o'clock yesterday morning, and went to bed an hour after midnight. Result of the day, mainly stolen from books, though credit given. 9,500 words, so I reduced my burden by one-third in one day. It was 5 days' work in one. I have nothing more to borrow or steal, the rest must all be written. It is 10 days' work, and unless something breaks, it will be finished in 5. We all send love to you and Mrs. Howells, and all the family. Yours as ever, Mark. Again, from Villeneuve, on Lake Geneva, Howells wrote urging him this time to spend the winter with them in Florence, where they would write their great American comedy of Orm's Motor, apostrophe hitches to enrich us beyond the dreams of avarice. We could have a lot of fun writing it, and you could go home with some of the good old Etruscan malaria in your bones, instead of the wretched pinchbeck Hartford article that you are suffering from now. It's a great opportunity for you. Besides, nobody over there likes you half as well as I do. It should be added that Orm's Motor was the provisional title that Clemens and Howells had selected for their comedy, which was to be built, in some measure, at least, around the character, or rather from the peculiarities, of Orion Clemens. The Cable mentioned in Mark Twain's reply is, of course, George W. Cable, who only a little while before had come up from New Orleans to conquer the North with his wonderful tales and readings. To W.D. Howells, in Switzerland. Hartford, November 4, 1882. My dear Howells, yes, it would be profitable for me to do that, because with your society to help me, I should swiftly finish this now apparently interminable book. But I cannot come, because I am not boss here, and nothing but dynamite can move Mrs. Clemens away from home in the winter season. I never had such a fight over a book in my life before. And the foolishest part of the whole business is that I started Osgood to editing it before I had finished writing it. As a consequence, large areas of it are condemned here and there and yonder, and I have the burden of these unfilled gaps harassing me, and the thought of the broken continuity of the work, while I am at the same time trying to build the last quarter of the book. However, at last I have said with sufficient positiveness that I will finish the book at no particular date, that I will not hurry it, that I will not hurry myself, that I will take things easy and comfortably, write when I choose to write, leave it alone when I so prefer. The printers must wait, the artists, the canvassers, and all the rest. I have got everything at a dead standstill, and that is where it ought to be, and that is where it must remain. To follow any other policy would be to make the book worse than it already is. I ought to have finished it before showing to anybody, and then sent it across the ocean to you to be edited, as usual. For you seem to be a great many shades happier than you deserve to be, and if I had thought of this thing earlier, I would have acted upon it, and taken the tuck somewhat out of your joyousness. In the same mail with your letter, arrived the enclosed from Orm the motorman. You will observe that he has an office. I will explain that this is a law office, and I think it probably does him as much good to have a law office without anything to do in it, as it would another man to have one with an active business attached. You see, he is on the electric light lane now, going to light the city, and allow me to take all the stock, if I want to. And he will manage it free of charge. It never would occur to this simple soul how much less costly it would be to me to hire him on a good salary, not to manage it. Do you observe the same old eagerness, the same old hurry, springing from the fear that if he does not move with the utmost swiftness, that colossal opportunity will escape him? Now just fancy this same frantic plunging after vast opportunities, going on week after week with this same man, during 50 entire years, and he has not yet learned, in the slightest degree, that there isn't any occasion to hurry, that his vast opportunity will always wait, and that whether it waits or flies, he certainly will never catch it. This immortal hopefulness, fortified by its immortal and unteachable misjudgment, is the immortal feature of this character, for a play, and we will write that play. We should be fools else. That staccato postscript reads as if some new and mighty business were imminent, for it is slung on the paper telegraphically, all the small words left out. I am afraid something newer and bigger than the electric light is swinging across his orbit. Save this letter for an inspiration. I have got 100 more. Cable has been here, creating worshippers on all hands. He is a marvelous talker on a deep subject. I do not see how even Spencer could unwind a thought more smoothly or orderly, and do it in a cleaner, clearer, crisper English. He astounded Twitchell with his faculty. You know, when it comes down to moral honesty, limpid innocence, and utterly blemishless piety, the apostles were mere policemen to Cable. So with this in mind, you must imagine him at a midnight dinner in Boston the other night, where we gathered around the board of the Somerset Club. Osgood, full, Boyle O'Reilly, full, Fairchild responsively loaded, and Aldrich and myself possessing the floor, and properly fortified. Cable told Mrs. Clemens when he returned here that he seemed to have been entertaining himself with horses, and had a dreamy idea that he must have gone to Boston in a cattle car. It was a very large time. He called it an orgy. And no doubt it was, viewed from his standpoint. I wish I were in Switzerland, and I wish we could go to Florence, but we have to leave these delights to you. There is no helping it. We all join in love to you, and all the family. Yours as ever, Mark. XXIII. Letters, 1883, to Howells and others. A guest of the Marquis of Lorne. The History Game. A play by Howells and Mark Twain. Mark Twain, in due season, finished the Miss Sissabi book, and placed it in Osgood's hands for publication. It was a sort of partnership arrangement in which Clemens was to furnish the money to make the book, and pay Osgood a percentage for handling it. It was, in fact, the beginning of Mark Twain's adventures as a publisher. Howells was not as happy in Florence as he had hoped to be. The social life there overwhelmed him. In February he wrote, "Our 2 months in Florence have been the most ridiculous time that ever even half-witted people passed. We have spent them in chasing round after people for whom we cared nothing, and being chased by them. My story isn't finished yet, and what part of it is done bears the fatal marks of haste and distraction. Of course, I haven't put pen to paper yet on the play. I wring my hands and beat my breast when I think of how these weeks have been wasted. and how I have been forced to waste them by the infernal social circumstances from which I couldn't escape. Clemens, now free from the burden of his own book, was light of heart and full of ideas and news, also of sympathy and appreciation. Howell's story of this time was woman's reason. Governor Jewell, of this letter, was Marshall Jewell, governor of Connecticut from 1871 to 1873. Later, he was minister to Russia, and in 1874 was United States Postmaster General. To W.D. Howells, in Florence. Hartford, March 1, 1883. My dear Howells, we got ourselves ground up in that same mill, once, in London, and another time in Paris. It is a kind of foretaste of hell. There is no way to avoid it except by the method which you have now chosen. One must live secretly, and cut himself utterly off from the human race, or life in Europe becomes an unbearable burden and work an impossibility. I learned something last night, and maybe it may reconcile me to go to Europe again sometime. I attended one of the astonishingly popular lectures of a man by the name of Stoddard, who exhibits interesting stereoptic in pictures, and then knocks the interest all out of them with his comments upon them. But all the world go there to look and listen, and are apparently well satisfied. And they ought to be fully satisfied, if the lecturer would only keep still, or die in the first act. But he described how retired tradesmen and farmers in Holland load a lazy sco with the family and the household effects, and then loaf along the waterways of the Low Countries all the summer long, paying no visits, receiving none, and just lazying a heavenly life out in their own private unpestered society, and doing their literary work, if they have any, wholly uninterrupted. If you had hired such a boat and sent for us, we should have a couple of satisfactory books ready for the press now with no marks of interruption, vexatious wearinesses, and other hellishnesses visible upon them anywhere. We shall have to do this another time. We have lost an opportunity for the present. Do you forget that heaven is packed with a multitude of all nations, and that these people are all on the most familiar? How the hell are you footing with Tomich swinging around the circle to all eternity hugging the saints and patriarchs and archangels, and forcing you to do the same, unless you choose to make yourself an object of remark if you refrain? Then why do you try to get to heaven? Be warned in time. We have all read your two opening numbers in the Century, and consider them almost beyond praise. I hear no dissent from this verdict. I did not know there was an untouched personage in American life, but I had forgotten the auctioneer. You have photographed him accurately. I have been an utterly free person for a month or two, and I do not believe I ever so greatly appreciated and enjoyed and realized the absence of the chains of slavery as I do this time. Usually my first waking thought in the morning is, I have nothing to do today, I belong to nobody, I have ceased from being a slave. Of course the highest pleasure, to be got out of freedom, and having nothing to do, is labor. Therefore I labor. But I take my time about it. I work 1 hour or four as happens to suit my mind, and quit when I please. And so these days are days of entire enjoyment. I told Clark the other day, to jog along comfortable, and not get in a sweat. I said I believed you would not be able to enjoy editing, that library over there, where you have your own legitimate work to do and be pestered to death by society besides. Therefore I thought, if he got it ready for you against your return, that would be best and pleasantest. You remember Governor Jewell, and the night he told about Russia, down in the library. He was taken with a cold about 3 weeks ago, and I stepped over one evening, proposing to beguile an idle hour for him with a yarn or two, but was received at the door with whispers, and the information, that he was dying. His case had been dangerous during that day only, and he died that night, 2 hours after I left. His taking off was a prodigious surprise, and his death has been most widely and sincerely regretted. Wynne. E. Dodge, the father-in-law of one of Jewell's daughters, dropped suddenly dead the day before Jewel died, but Jewel died without knowing that. Jewel's widow went down to New York, to Dodge's house, the day after Jewel's funeral, and was to return here day before yesterday, and she did in a coffin. She fell dead, of heart disease, while her trunks were being packed for her return home. Florence Strong, one of Jewel's daughters, who lives in Detroit, started east on an urgent telegram, but missed a connection somewhere, and did not arrive here in time to see her father alive. She was his favorite child, and they had always been like lovers together. He always sent her a box of fresh flowers once a week to the day of his death, a custom which he never suspended, even when he was in Russia. Mrs. Strong had only just reached her western home again, when she was summoned to Hartford, to attend her mother's funeral. I have had the impulse to write you several times. I shall try to remember better henceforth. With sincerest regards to all of you, yours as ever, Mark. Mark Twain made another trip to Canada in the interest of copyright dash this time to protect the Mississippi book. When his journey was announced by the press, the Marquis of Lorne telegraphed an invitation inviting him to be his guest at Rideau Hall, in Ottawa. Clemens accepted, of course, and was handsomely entertained by the daughter of Queen Victoria and her husband, then Governor General of Canada. On his return to Hartford he found that Osgood had issued a curious little book, for which Clemens had prepared an introduction. It was an absurd volume, though originally issued with serious intent, its title being The New Guide of the Conversation in Portuguese and English. The New Guide of the Conversation in Portuguese and English, by Pedro Caxolino, with an introduction by Mark Twain. Osgood, Boston, 1883. Evidently the new guide was prepared by some simple Portuguese soul with but slight knowledge of English beyond that which could be obtained from a dictionary, and his literal translation of English idioms are often startling, as, for instance, this one, taken at random. Little learns are happies enough for two may to satisfy their fancies on the literature. Mark Twain thought this quaint book might amuse his royal hostess, and forwarded a copy in what he considered to be the safe and proper form. To Colonel de Winton, in Ottawa, Canada. Hartford, June 4, 83. Dear Colonel de Winton, I very much want to send a little book to Her Royal Highness the famous Portuguese phrase book, but I do not know the etiquette of the matter, and I would not wittingly infringe any rule of propriety. It is a book which I perfectly well know will amuse her home at most, if as he has not seen it before, and will still amuse her home at least, even if as he has inspected it 100 times already. So I will send the book to you, and you who know all about the proper observances, will protect me from indiscretion, in case of need, by putting the said book in the fire, and remaining as dumb as I generally was when I was up there. I do not rebind the thing, because that would look as if I thought it worth keeping, whereas it is only worth glancing at and casting aside. Will you please present my compliments to Mrs. de Winton and Mrs. Mackenzie? And I beg to make my sincere compliments to you, also, for your infinite kindnesses to me. I did have a delightful time up there, most certainly. Truly yours, S50. Clemens. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.